Welcome to the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. This is where we'll inspire you to transcend, transform, make magic, live your soul purpose, and be the unicorn that you truly are. Live in pure bliss.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. I'm here today with Shinjani Das, the go-getter girl who's on a mission to write one of the world's greatest stories ever written. She's amazing, she's dynamic, and she's now all yours. Welcome to our show today.
Thank you so much. She's all yours. Oh my
she's
God,
all
I love
yours. I think I can see us laughing the whole time during this podcast. So I'm so glad that we connected. I love your energy. And, you know, from what I've read about you, you're an amazing person. Tell me about about being the go-getter girl. What is that? How did you begin that? And what does it mean?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mema. I think really there was a turning point in my life, as I'm sure there was with you, when you started to really focus on being soul-centered, right? And so for me, that was about 2014, but really professionally 2015. And what ended up happening was I was just stuck. I wasn't getting where I needed to go. And I always knew my potential. I think that has been the greatest gift of all, is that I always knew where I belonged. And as a result, I also always knew where I didn't belong. And so right. what ended up happening was all the stuff that I was doing 2014, 2015, I mean, pretty recently, I just felt was beneath my potential. You know, I felt like I was not achieving my potential. And that was irritating to me. And I realized, I did a lot of introspection, and I realized that the reason I wasn't achieving my potential was that I was waiting for things to happen to me. I was waiting for people to get in touch. I was waiting for people to ask me to speak, or whatever the case was. And I realized I had this epiphany. I said, oh my God, what if I make the first move? What if I reach out first? What if I call you and tell you that I'm really interested in speaking? You know, what would happen then? And so that was the question. And I said, well, the only way to figure it out is to do it, you know? And so that's when this go-getter theme came in, that, you know what, I think I'm going to become a go-getter. I'm going to become someone who makes life happen for her, who does not let life happen to her. And at that point, I was letting life happen to me, and it wasn't very pretty. So long story short, that's what it was. And it was this epiphany. And I'll be honest, it's a lot harder on this side, right? It's a lot harder making the first move and everything. It's a lot harder being so self-aware to even know what you are deserving of, right? But, and I'm 25, I'm really young, you know? So all of this has happened very early on in my life, but I'm very thankful. And now that's sort of my mission, is to get a lot of people to join me on this journey to becoming go-getters, right? Dreamers are great, and we're all dreamers, but at some point you need action. You need results. And
exactly.
So that's kind of where the journey started.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that impressed me about you is that you're 25 years old. I mean, a lot of people your age, when I was 25, weren't doing what you're doing. We weren't going to get stuff. We were in college, and we were just out of school and kind of figuring things out. I just love millennials these days. You guys are just such badasses. You know, you don't wait. You just kind of get up and take over the world. You figure things out, you know. I mean, I love my generation, you know. Of course, I'm part of that. But I just love the fact that when you think of the average 25-year-old these days, you guys are just kind of taking things over and beginning all these movements. And that's so exciting to me, because I know what this means for the future of, you know, your gen and like my daughter's generation. So I was thinking, so you're so wise for your age. How do you get all this wisdom and know what to go after at 25 years old? Because you began before you were 25. You're kind of a couple of years into this work.
Yeah. I started at 23. So, yes.
Oh, my
gosh. I'll be honest. I think also the journey has been a long time coming, right? So if you talk to anyone, whether that's, you know, an actress or a singer or whatever, like they make it big at 24, but they've been doing it since they were 13, you know? So I think for me, that was also a part of it. So I started competitive public speaking at 14. And so even then, I mean, it's the same skill, right? You sort of have to prepare the speech about whatever topic is sort of given to you, right? And you deliver the speech and you're judged and you're, I mean, it's a very mature process, you know, it's not easy to do, much less at 14. And so I think somewhere that's always been my story is that, you know, I've always been mature. I've always had that intuition. But I think what's been crazy is this world. I think I was playing at such a small level then, you know, that it was easier. Right, it's easier to write this little speech and win, and you know, at the visual level. But now it's like global; it's like worldwide. You know, so I think that has been crazy in terms of getting used to that, and then of course developing, you know, sufficient content to meet those new needs. And so, in terms of your wisdom, I do a lot of introspection. I'm like a closet introvert. I'm like at my core, I'm still introverted. And so I think that's really helpful in terms of introspection, in terms of research, in terms of work, you know, as happy-go-lucky and amazing and awesome energy and all as I am, I'm also very honest. And then I work a lot, you know, a lot, like a lot. And so I think that has also been helpful is working, you know, and putting my goals together, putting my metrics together, putting my objectives together. And then I have a, you know, background in industrial engineering. For a while, I thought that would be like weird in this role. But now I realize that that's amazing because I know how to study, I know how to learn, and I know how to get results, you know. And so that's very useful in this line of work, right? In media, where everything is changing every single day. So yeah, I think that's kind of where we are. But yes, I'm trying to be, you know, a little bit more normal.
No, don't be normal. Don't be normal. Normal is so boring. I'm the most weird person you'll ever meet. Like, I love being weird. I just think it's so wonderful. And I love that you said you're an introvert because it's funny you're talking and you sound like me. Like, I'm not 25, but you know, you're. So people think people who are, you know, speakers and, you know, authors and out there and influencers are extroverts. But for me, I feel like to do what I have to do with my work, I have to have time alone. I love my alone time. And I love people being around, but I have to think and create because you have a lot of content that you develop, right? To, you know, you're influencing all these people. And to do that work, you know, you have to be to connect your higher self with your higher self.
Yeah.
And then create the stuff. And even your go-getterism, is that a word? Mm-hmm. Like you got to feel that energy and it comes from having that quiet time.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah. And actually, you know what? I'm an ambivert, honestly, but at my core, I am introverted because I think you're right. I mean, it's very impossible to do all of this and to be sort of surrounded by people all the time, right? Because your production process should be private, right? I'm a firm believer. And even in your case, your keynotes, your coaching, your what, like it's a private process and then you share it with the world, you know?
Exactly.
I don't think that I can like create a speech with 50 people watching and then give it. Like, I don't think that's realistic.
I know. It's funny. Yeah. I had a speech one time in my team. I had a speech and I write my best speeches last minute. You know, I will draft them, but I can't make it spark until the last, like, you know, hour to half hour. It makes my team crazy. So they kept saying, you have this big speaking engagement. We want to see your speech and we want to critique it. And I was like, I just couldn't write. I couldn't think it, you know? And then finally I said, you guys just leave me alone for like a couple of days. And you know, it came out.
Yeah.
So I love that. So one thing I liked about you too is your family is so, you know, you guys are close and they instilled a work ethic in you at an early age. That is so critical to have to give young people that drive and that, you know, that ambition and the ethic. And so, and you're an immigrant as well. When did you come to the States?
Yeah.
Tell me about that journey and how being an immigrant, especially with this climate we're in these days, how has it made you, you know, who you are?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely who I am. It's not even made me who I am. It is who I am, you know? And so I think that is a big part of my story because for the longest time, I felt like a complete outsider. Like, I felt like I didn't belong. I felt not even just looks. I think I was never worried about that I look different, but it was more along the lines of I don't understand American culture. I don't know what NFL is. I don't know anything, you know? And so, like, pop culture, music, like I just fell out of it for a long time. I think it was only in college, probably 18, that I realized that I could actually be popular because that's when I kind of came out of my shell. Even in high school, you know, didn't have that many friends. Was you know, very well respected, was very well regarded, but I don't think I had, I was definitely not the most popular kid in high school. And so in college was when I realized that, wow, I can actually be popular. And so that was a big moment because I think for every immigrant, I hope I'm speaking on behalf of them, you know, there is this feeling of, do I belong? You know, and I think anyone who says otherwise would be lying because we feel that, you know, especially in my case, I came when I was nine. About 9 and a half to the United States, so not too young. You know, I was almost 10. You know, 10 is like you're almost there. You know, preteen. You know, so a lot of thoughts are developed. A little bit of who you are is already developed. And so, yeah, I think it was really, really hard. And I think somewhere that has been a huge driving force, Mema. That, you know, the reason that I want to become really big, the reason that I want to become a global icon of sorts, is that I want to prove that just because you did not belong in, you know, middle school and high school has no indication on your future, you know? Yeah. So today, you know, I'm everywhere. Marie Claire reached out and all these different magazines reached out. So today I'm literally at the epicenter of popularity, you know, whether that is media, whether that is now my fashion choices, statements. I mean, everybody wants to be my friend. And I'm not saying this like, you know, in a conceited way, but in a realistic way. And this is so new for me because I didn't grow up with, you know, everybody wanting to be my friend. You know, I didn't grow up with the whole world, you know, falling at my feet. But today, that is sort of becoming a reality because of the internal work that I've done, because of the person that I've become, because I've made a lot of choices that many people have not made. You know, I didn't do the typical things people do in high school. Literally every weekend I was studying for these competitions, you know, giving these speeches. And because of that, I am where I am today. So I think that has made me who I am. Today I feel like I belong, so I don't have that issue or complex anymore. And I think somewhere I want to tell young people that, you know, you do you, you know, forget about what other people think, what they want you to do. You know, you focus on yourself, because if I had listened to what everybody else was doing and saying, like, I would not be here today in this position. And so I think that is my message. And I'm very proud to be an immigrant. I'm equally as Indian as I am American, and it's a big part of my life. So I'm really happy to be like that face today, you know, for women of color, people of color, because I think I can touch so many different people's lives through just the person that I am. I speak Spanish fluently, so there's like a lot going on. So it's fun. And I think somewhere, you know, God sort of ordained me to be in this position because of that, you know, because I have the ability to reach across divides and sort of bring people together. So no, today it's like amazing, but starting out, yeah, I felt like I didn't belong.
I love it. I love you're a firecracker in a pistol. I love it because, you know, I feel like immigrants are, I mean, America is a melting pot. And I feel like the things, right, when I asked you, how did it make you who you were? What I meant was that you can choose to either see your difference as being something that makes you an outcast, or you can see your difference as being unique and being special and being something that you want to shine. And the immigrant experience is so powerful because we're all so different. We're all so unique. And we bring unique opportunities to America. We bring unique talents. We bring unique cultures. And and I feel like, especially with the climates right now, it's incumbent upon us to really shine and be individuals in our own right and bring our A game, because there's so much we have to offer coming here that others do not have to offer. I mean, I came here at 15 years old alone. And I remember feeling that, you know, not being included and looking different and just feeling different and not fitting in. So even though I felt out like an outsider, I didn't want to become like everybody else. You know what I mean? I didn't like being different, but I like being me. And so I feel like, in a sense, you've retained that sense of your culture, but you're also, you're every American girl, because most of America are immigrants, right? And
right,
so,
right,
and you're creating a global lifestyle brand, which is, you know, important, because right now a lot of people we're a blended community. I mean, I don't know. I can't walk down the street for more than 5 feet and without seeing couples that are biracial, not just black and white, but, you know, there's black and Asian, you know, Indian and white. I mean, people are just blending.
Yeah.
And I feel like for the world to progress along the way it's progressing, and for us to create the soul-based work we want to create and really connect and share and rise, we have to blend and become, you know, keep retain our culture, but become one as a human race. Yeah.
I'm 100% with you. And I think for both of us, it gives us such an appreciation and understanding of diversity, because it is who we are, that when we say these things, we're able to connect and relate a lot more because it's authentic, right? It's not something that we're reading out. It's literally that's what we've lived, you know? So no, I'm with you. I'm with you. And where did you come from?
Liberia, West Africa. My parents came I came after there was a coup d'etat, and my father put me on a alone at 15 years old. So I didn't come to people. I was just kind of coming here, and everything's different. You know, the way people talk is different. Yeah. The way that, I mean, you envision America is one thing, and when you come to here, it's a whole different ball game. But I love that people were so warm and inviting. And you know, I've been here now for, you know, more than half my life. And I love the culture. And I feel like no matter what happens, America has such a strong foundation of freedom, of freedom, of inclusion, of of people being, of we all are the people that it's just, it's so powerful and it's so strong. And I love that I'm meeting people like yourself who are dedicated to increasing that energy, you know, locally and on a global scale.
So I'm with you.
So I know you're a go-getter. I know you have these goals and dreams, but you began 2 years ago, and now you're the epicenter, like you said. How did you start the whole process? Because having an idea is one thing, and creating the strategy is another thing, and then executing it so flawlessly to where you're where you want to be. I mean, you still have things to do, but you've done a lot in just 2 years. How did you do that? Tell me how it happened.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's less than 2 years, because I got discovered in March 2015. So in March, it will be 2 years. So yeah, less than 2 years. And yeah, you know, I think that's been my strength. Because in the beginning, I was very like worried. I was like, media, like TV, like, what is this? Like, is this, should I even do this? Like, there were so many questions, because it's just so new, right? And I'm very honest and saying I don't come from this background. You know, I didn't major in journalism. I'm not a communications major. So I just was totally, literally fish out of water. And so I thought about it, but then I stepped back, and I also thought that what am I ultimately trying to do? I'm trying to ultimately build a business, right? And I knew that, you know, from the time being, from when I got discovered, and that was when, you know, obviously you don't get any money for appearing on TV. So that wasn't a reality, but I knew that I wanted to build all of this into a business. And I also knew that I wanted my own brand. So essentially, to me, that is a business. I understand business. Like, that is something that I've always understood. You know, business leader through and through. So I'm like, okay, media, whatever, the industry can be anything, but at the core of it, it's a business, right? And so I was very happy about that, and I was excited about that. And then strategy is also something that I think, being sort of a closet introvert, comes to me naturally, because I've played everything strategically from Georgia Tech, where I went to school, undergrad. I was a commencement speaker. That too, I had sort of seen in my future as a freshman at Georgia Tech. So that has been a part of my story, like, forever, right? I've been super, super strategic about my moves, about my plays, about, you know, what I'm doing. And so again, so long story short, media, super unfamiliar, TV, what? Business and strategy, though, I was like, I got this, like, this is great. And so really, I think the challenge, my mom, was putting what I knew into something that I didn't know. So I think in terms of the challenge, which has been insane, it's figuring out this landscape, you know, of what is media, what defines media today, where do I want to play, how do I want to play, how do I want my brand to be perceived. So all of those questions were really hard to answer. And I'll be honest, I've been kind of alone on this journey. So yes, there have been people who are very supportive, but I don't know if I asked any of them for real advice along the way, right? So all of it has sort of been, what do I want to do? Let me have a conversation with myself. Okay, we're doing it. Like, that, literally, that has been what it is. So I always knew, like, if I succeed, a lot of the credit will go to me. If I fail,
I love it.
Pretty much, I'm responsible. I'm responsible. There was really no one else.
Have you considered writing a book about your experiences?
Of course, of course. Yeah, that's like definitely in the, you know, offing. So I'm doing a couple of like guest chapters and books this year. So like starting out, I'm kind of feeling the water, but yeah, absolutely. I'm 25. So my goal is before 30, you'll see the first book, like official book. So I'm excited. But yeah, I think that has been really hard in terms of figuring out the new landscape. And then, you know, not really having anybody to ask in terms of questions, because nobody has really done what I want to do in terms of there are people who I'm inspired by, but they haven't done exactly what I want to do. So even if I ask them, I don't know if they know the answer. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think that has been huge. So I've just gained a ridiculous amount of self-reliance and self-respect and self-empowerment, you know, because my thing is like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it on my own, in the sense that I want people to realize that nobody made me who I am today. You know, I made me who I am.
Well, and that's what trailblazers do. You know, I mean, most trailblazers who create and innovate, it is a lonely place to be a leader of that kind when you're the only one doing what you do or creating a whole new landscape, you know, and people don't see what you're seeing. So it's an incredibly vulnerable, when you're vulnerable, it's incredibly scary, but also it's incredibly brave to be able to move into a space where you're at the frontier of something that's new and different.
Absolutely. And I think somewhere I also have learned a lot about my own brand through the eyes of others. I think that has been amazing, because in the beginning, you know, when I started public speaking, I wasn't as conscious of my color because I was just like, I'm giving a speech. But today, I mean, the first thing everybody notices about, and maybe both of us, is that, you know, we're brown, you know? And so I think that also creates familiarity, especially with women of color. They come up to me, they just like are so happy to see a woman of color as a keynote versus, you know, someone else or someone more typical. So I think that has been amazing, because that tells me that I should actually play this up, not hide it, you know, not say that we're all the same, you know, because we're not, right? And actually who we are makes us sort of different. And so I think I've learned about my own brand through the eyes of others. I think that's been a very special experience.
Well, and there are other girls who are younger than you who are looking at you. You never know who's watching. Mm-hmm. You know, I will say this, when I began my charity, I felt like you. I was, you know, I began in bed. I was in treatment and chemotherapy. Yeah. I thought, I'm going to create a nationwide and global organization to help young women with breast cancer. And my family was like, are you on something? Because how are you going to do that? But I saw something that people didn't see. And I had to believe in my goals. I had to believe in it and move into it. But I'll tell you, I have had so many people contact me who are young women who are either African-American or women of color, who will say, I'm so glad you are here today. I saw you speak earlier or last weekend or whatever. Yeah. And they've never seen anyone that they're at their age, you know, of that color speaking or doing whatever. Right. So I would say that we don't know who's watching, but it's so important to just stand up and move into your power, because people need to see young women like yourself be trailblazers, be go-getters, and be brave and fearless.
Right. No, I'm with you. And I have the most respect for you, because I know what it takes to leave sort of that comfort zone, leave normalcy, and create something that's brave. And I mean, you're incredible, right? So you already know that. And I'm sure millions of women are inspired by you. And absolutely. And I think, you know, my big thing is also that, I come from a different background, right? Industrial engineering, like very tough academic. Because my thing is like, women should be powerful. Women should be powerful. Like, women should be substantial, you know? So I think I was very hell-bent on that in the beginning, that I don't just want to speak on random things. You know, I don't want to just talk about how, you know, beauty comes from within or whatever. Like, my thing was, if I'm going to talk, it's going to be about hard things. It's going to be about difficult topics. It's going to be about things that people are not talking about, you know, because that's where I fall in. So I think in the beginning, like, I had enough self-respect to know where I should play versus where I shouldn't play, you know? So I think that has also been huge. Even today, people associate me as this like hard hitting, like powerful, you know, as opposed to like wallflower, you know? So I think that has also been a very conscious decision. And it's hard, right? I mean, it's hard to play as a woman in business. We're in such a minority, right? Not to mention women of color in business. That's even more of a minority, you know, entrepreneurs and then speakers and writers. I mean, we are literally, you know, maybe single digit percent, honestly, right? And so I think that has also been huge. But then that also means that we have a lot more responsibility, right?
Yes, so. It does. And it's good. We have to own that power. We have to own that position.
Right.
I read a quote the other day. It was so simple, but it just really struck me. It just said, own your power, you know? Because oftentimes we think, well, we're the only one here, or, you know, I look different, or why am I here? You know, or just,
right,
you know,
right.
I mean, I'm a strong woman, but I also sometimes have senses of where I'm giving a speech or I'm someplace and I'm thinking,
right,
wow, I'm really here. This is really happening. And
right.
I was an article and it just says, you know, own your power. And it just hit me in my gut in a big way, because as we own our power, we're giving other young girls who are watching us or coming after us,
have
to own their power, you know, at 10, at 15, at 20. And so, and that's how you get women to change the world, is owning your power early. Speaking about power, you are a powerhouse woman, trailblazer for Leave a Leaks feature, the motivational quotes for powerhouse woman, which also included people who are very notable, like Oprah Winfrey, Sheryl Sandberg, Beyonce, Queen Bee, Hillary Clinton, Michelle Obama, Taylor Swift, and Malala Yousafzai. So Yousafzai, how did you get into this powerhouse woman trailblazer quote, you know, book? What happened? Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, it was so amazing because, again, this was 2 years ago. So this was 23 when this happened. And I think what happened was I wrote for Label League. I wrote the feature, 5 Secrets of a Go-Getter Girl, for Label League originally, and then Huffington Post picked it up from there. And there was this quote that, again, I very, you know, innocently said. I did not write it, you know, meaning to be quoted and, you know, written about and featured, but I genuinely meant it, which is that I am unapologetic about being ambitious, and you should be too. You know, and again, this is directed towards women. It's directed towards women saying, I am very unapologetically ambitious. And oh my God, you're a woman, you should also be unapologetically ambitious. I think somewhere, again, I looked at it as like very simple, very this, but I think when you step back, it's brave of a woman to say that, right? And also, I think this is not the rhetoric that you hear from women. So I think it got a lot of attention because of that. And so I noticed that article was being tweeted and retweeted, you know, a bunch of times. And then specifically that quote was being pulled out. I think the exact words were, I'm the Andrew, you have the quote. I don't want to misquote myself, but something along the lines of like, I'm unapologetic about being an ambitious woman, and you should be too. It's like super simple, really short. Even on that quote list, like it's literally the shortest quote or one of the shortest quotes, but it has gotten one of the most levels of attention, even on Label League's, the publication when they first posted this. I mean, that quote singled out had like more retweets and likes than like Beyonce's and Michelle Obama's and all, because I think people relate, like they connect. And I think that also was a lesson to me, in that people like brevity. They like, you know, short, concise, to the point, you know, like you're not confused when you read this. You're like, wait, what? Like, you're not confused. Like, it's pretty simple. All I'm saying is be unapologetic, be ambitious. I am. Oh my God, you should be too. So again, it was good. It was amazing. When I saw that, I was like, oh my God, this is nuts. But I think somewhere, you know, they saw me for who I am before I did. I mean, literally that article was like, you know, women trailblazers, like making their own path. This was 2 years ago. So I looked at that, I was like, really? But then I was like, you know what? They're right. I mean, I've never had anyone to follow, you know, everything is different. And so, and you know what? This is a great example of me literally owning that. Cause in the beginning I was like, no, literally it's like Michelle Obama, me, Oprah, like that's where I am. I'm literally in the middle of them. And so in the beginning I was like, this is like crazy. But then I did the opposite. I said, no, if they did this, they're not dumb. There's a reason they did this, you know? So I'm going to own it, you know? And so since then I really have. So like this past week I was on C-Suite Radio, literally like chief executive officers across the country. And I'm not going to apologize. You know, I'm 25, whatever. It's like, if you're interviewing me, you must think that I'm worth it, right? No one has time to waste. You know, if you're quoting me, it's not because you think I'm cute, right? And so I think that's also something that I like to tell girls is, like you said, I mean, own your substance, own your power. So yeah, I mean, it was amazing. But now I'm like, man, gotta do a lot more.
Yeah, you're just, the more you talk, the more I'm falling in love with you. We have to get together and have drinks sometimes.
We know, so we should.
I would love that. So you were in Forbes. Did an interview where they said, and four things you did before you became a CEO. And of the four things you said you did before you became a CEO, the fourth thing you said that I love, you said, stop asking a question that does not have an answer. Can you explain what that means? I mean, I read it, but I want you to tell listeners what you mean by this. Stop asking a question that does not have an answer. That's a powerful statement.
Because it's true, right? The whole, like, is this going to work, right? Which is what any person who's jumping from corporate to entrepreneurship is asking, right? Is this going to work? Am I going to fail? Am I going to be financially sustainable? Thankfully, I did not have, you know, children and a husband and whoever else to support, you know, so that wasn't part of the picture. I know for many people who are jumping ship, you know, they're very much well into the family life, right? So whether that's, you know, family, kids, husband, whatever. And that's hard. You know, I will be the first one to say that I did not have that. And so I can't speak from that perspective. But I think don't keep questioning that, you know, whether you will be successful, because you don't know. You don't know if you'll be successful. You don't know if you'll be a failure. You don't know if your idea will take off. You don't know if your idea will not take off. You know, so I think the only thing to do is to try. And I'm a big believer in sort of premeditated risks, right? So I'm never going to be the one to tell you to quit your job, you know, start a company, do it now, have fun. Like, I'm not unrealistic. And so I realized that it is not a possibility for everyone, right? You do have to have the financial resources, the capital. I mean, you're probably not going to make money, right? Or that much the first year. Right. So understand that there's a significant investment involved. And so really where I was coming from is because I asked myself that is, should I do it? Should I leave? And then I realized that it literally has no answer. Right. If I talk to my boss and say, should I leave? Obviously, he's going to say no. Right. But if I talk to myself, I'm going to say yes. Right. And so I realized that I just need to shut out the noise and focus on myself and do what you've done all your life is center myself with a higher power, which is exactly what I did. You know, I came home from work one day, talked to myself, and I said, what do you want to do? Forget your boss, forget parents, forget siblings, family, pressure. Like, what do you want to do? What does your heart tell you? And this is exactly what my heart told me. And that's why I wrote that feature in Forbes, because I've never been the first one to follow my heart. I think all my life I've pretty much followed my head, you know. So this was one of the big decisions where I was like, you know what? I have to do what I have to do, and this is what I have to do. And that's when I put in my notice. That's when I talked to my boss, and here we are, you know, a couple of months later. So I'm officially sort of full time since October, but not too long. But, you know, it's been the greatest decision of my life. So I would encourage people to obviously be calculated, like don't just like quit without any plan or action or whatever, but don't keep questioning yourself, you know, because like for me, I knew this, and I was 24 then. I'm 25 now. I was 24 then. I knew that this is what I have to do. I had such a clear vision of what I wanted to build. It is a different matter that parents were like, what are you doing? Like leaving a, you know, $80,000 job. And I told them, I said, I'm playing 80 million. Like that's the game I want to play. So just work with me. Understand that I'm not, you know, dumb and that I know what I'm doing, you know? So I think that's kind of where it all went. But yes, do not ask yourself questions that don't have answers, because you'll just end up in the same place, which is exactly what happened to me, you know, that should I do it? I don't know. Should I do it? I don't know. Like,
it's so interesting. Right? I used to work in corporate America, and I sit in many meetings where they discuss strategy, and they literally would have a meeting to have a meeting to have a meeting. And they would meet about the one topic or planning the plan of the plan. I mean, it could go on for weeks, and I'm a firm believer. I like having a plan. I love a plan, but I just want to get shit done. So I'm a jumper. I just jump in, and I mean, I make a plan, but I know that things change. Exactly. And I'm open to God jumping in with me and saying, hey, you have a plan, man, but here's my plan, and letting things just kind of synergize. And so I think you have to plan, but I'm all about just jumping and letting life and serendipity take its course.
Yeah.
So they find that.
Absolutely, but again, I think I'll also be very transparent in saying that finances are a real concern from just everyone that I've talked to who wants to jump ship, but is afraid to. I think the number one thing stopping them, and it's not the idea, it's not the passion. They have enough of, you know, both. I think it's the finances, right? And so I think I definitely want to be transparent with everyone listening to please focus on your finances. Please save up at least 2 years of rent and living expenses and whatnot. And obviously you're not going to live like a king or queen for, you know, those first 2 years, but just enough to sort of get by so that literally all of your attention and time can be focused on the business. Like right now, I just do not have the luxury of piecing out, you know, 3 days at a time, because I'm literally building a business, which is very, very new right now. Very, very sensitive time in the journey, right? So just be aware of that, because I don't want to make it sound like this is for everyone, you know, because finances are a real concern.
They are important, but you know, entrepreneurism for everyone. Everyone can't be an entrepreneur.
No.
I mean, and everyone. I think you're right. I love your transparency. It's important to, and I want to reiterate what you said. It's important to save up money. Some people can't save 2 years. Maybe they save a year or 6 months or nine months. But it's important to have resources at your disposal that you can depend on while you're building your dream. But I think you have to believe in yourself, because whether you leave with 3 months in the bank, 6 months or 9 months, you want to have a plan, and you have to believe that what you're going to do, maybe it's going to be a success. It's going to happen.
Yes.
I jumped with 3 months worth of money. I was insane. I just jumped, left my job, and it wasn't pleasant, but I was, when you're hungry, and this is true for everybody I talked to who's an entrepreneur, when you're really hungry for success to happen, it'll happen, because people are asking me, how did you end up on Oprah in less than a year? How did you end up here?
Yeah.
You're in Forbes, you're all over the place, but you're hungry for it. And I will also say that, you know, if being an entrepreneur is not for you, you could stay in your day job and that's fine, but there's some level of passion and pride and contentment when you can build something out of your gifts and talents, watch it blossom and grow.
Yeah.
And so tell me, how did you help? Do you help other young people who are coming up out of school who are wanting to be entrepreneurs and, you know, kind of take the leap? And if you do, what do you advise them to do when they're going from dream to, you know, to go getting it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say you are 100% right. And that's something that I've noticed too, is the minute you're hungry, you're passionate, you're authentic with sales, especially, right? People catch that and they're willing to give you business, right? They're excited to give you business because they see you as a person who's alive in a world where, you know, honestly, I just don't think that many people are alive in this world. I was just thinking about this yesterday in terms of, you know, like you said, passionate, excited, you know, alive. I don't see that as much as I would like to. And so with entrepreneurs, I mean, you have to be alive, right? It's kind of the nature of the job. And so I've 100% noticed that in terms of people willing to give me business very early on because of that hunger and drive. So you're absolutely right. Definitely want to appreciate that point. In terms of coaching, yes, I think that has been a huge source of demand for me. And again, I'm super new, right? I mean, literally October was when I went full-time, when I went public with all of it, because before that it was sort of just a side hustle. And absolutely, I've been flooded with inquiries and can you do this and can you teach a class? And honestly, like, I will do that big time in the next couple of months. I think right now it's been a lot of like one-on-one coaching, one-on-one, how do you jump from corporate to entrepreneurship? And I think there, what I iterate to them is you have to have a plan, right? It's not random, it's not magic, it's not one day this will all work out, you know, it's none of that, right? Because I've been very premeditated with my plan. And so that's what I teach my clients is, you know, how do we create a business model for you? How do we figure out what your idea is? How do we figure out if there's even a need for your idea? You know, so like asking those tough questions, because in their mind, they're like, this is great. Obviously it'll work, but I can sort of come in as the unbiased perspective and say, okay, let's pull up statistics around whatever diversity or is this a need? You know, is this a need in the marketplace and how do we prove that? So yeah, I've done a lot of that one-on-one. But I think right now I'm also trying to build more of that into like a, you know, group coaching session and like let's get 200 women in a room together and let's go through, you know, workshops and things like that. So yeah, that's 100% on the cards. Actually there's a lot on the cards right now. And I think that has been really exciting in terms of the responses. I'm being pulled in so many directions, from like diversity and inclusion conferences to women in business to women entrepreneurs to like how to be, you know, how to speak up. Like, I'm just literally being pulled in every direction possible. So part of me is also like, what do I want to do? I can't do all of it. So I think that's also good. Because again, the representation thing, right? Because as a woman of color who's doing all these different things, like, there's just not a lot of me out there. And so all these opportunities are sort of coming to me. And so I think that's been a blessing, but I also have to figure out, like, what do I want to scale versus what do I just want to keep doing as a one-off, right? So yeah, I 100%, the entrepreneurship thing is super close to my heart, because I think that's financial independence, that's empowerment. Being a business owner is a different experience, unlike anything that I've ever experienced. And so I want more women, especially, to experience that. So yeah, I will 100% do a lot of that internationally too. You know, in different countries, how do you get women to build businesses, and not even businesses, high growth businesses, you know, $1 million businesses, 6-figure businesses, you know, 8-figure businesses, you know, because that's something that I'm very passionate about. So yeah, so I hope, you know, we get to do a lot of that in the future too.
I love it. I could talk to you forever. So tell me,
I am.
You're so awesome. You mentioned spirituality earlier, and that being a part of your success. Tell me more about how you integrate that to support you. Because anybody who's a leader, entrepreneur, who's successful, has to have certain things in their toolkit to help them, you know, to keep their mindset, you know, strong, keep them focused, and kind of, you know, have them have as a base, a foundation. Tell me about your spirituality and what tools are in your toolbox that support you in your growth.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, the biggest thing that I'm just very, very passionate about is keeping a clean mind, you know, clean energy, happy energy, clean mind, clean soul. I think in the line of work that I'm in, it is so obvious when I'm off, because then my talks are off, my interviews are off, what I write is off, everything is off. You know, and so there's danger. There's danger if I'm not at peace with myself. There's danger if I'm not at one with myself, because then what I talk doesn't make sense. What I write doesn't make sense. And as a result, it's not connecting. As a result, there are problems. And so I've learned that already. And of course, this is true for anyone, right? It's like, if you're not centered and sort of at peace, then your work suffers. But yours and mine is like of a different like scale, right? Like, if you are not at peace with yourself, Oprah's gonna catch you. You know,
right.
it's like different.
Oprah's gonna catch you. That's so funny.
Yeah. So like, I think that's like what I'm getting my mind around. And it's hard. And I think you've experienced this a little bit at a little bit more of a mature age than I am. I'm still young by many respects, right? So I have to be very careful now about how I say things, what I say, and all that. So I think that has been a big driving force for me. So in terms of spirituality, you know, start off the day with meditation. 10 minutes. There's an app called Headspace. I promise this is not sponsored. I just love Headspace, which is really great. And then just you know, being within myself, I think distracting myself from all the noise, because there's just so much noise in my life right now, more than there's ever been, you know, whether that's just people who want something from me or just noise, you know. So I think I really try to close off as much noise as possible and focus on what's real, what I need to do, my work, you know, my mental health, you know. So I think that has been a big thing. And just, you know, shutting it off. Because, I mean, you're not a CEO 24/7, right? You're not a boss 24/7. So being sort of okay, being vulnerable, you know, being honest, being like, hey, I am struggling in some things, you know, like, this is not, like, I think for me, I guess I never had a warm-up phase. I think that's something that I just realized now. I mean, I started at 23 and it literally has become this in 2 years. I've not had time to like play small. You know what I mean? Like, I've not had time to test the waters. Like, it's been pretty big, pretty fast, you know? So right. I think that requires a lot of maturity to handle, because otherwise, you know, you hear of all the people who made it big young and then like just, you know, lost it. So I think just being, you know, mature, being happy, being sane, you know, and always like speaking from a place of maturity and higher power. I mean, again, I think what helps is like, I'm also like that naturally, you know, so sometimes I sound like, you know, a saint, but that's how I talk in my own life. I was like, you should do this and you should rise above and, you know, you should set him free. Like, don't argue, don't this, like be at a higher level. That's always who I've been. So I think it's easier for me in some respect, but I think what's crazy is like the noise, like the volume of just stuff, you know, around me today is like ridiculous. Like, this is something that I've never experienced. I'm dealing with that, figuring out a way to deal with that.
It's so important. You hit the nail on the head early on. You mentioned, you know, being able to find that quiet space because the world continues to become, you know, even more noisy. There's so many different things. We love technology, but it can be to our detriment at times. So having a ritual for one of the things that you mentioned is like having that headspace tool. And for me, it's like having time in the morning to just meditate and pray and center. And things like meditation aren't just tools for in the morning. You know, I find that as I get busy throughout my day and I get, you know, maybe sometimes spun up or things get moving fast, I just stop. I have reminders on my phone to just, it just says, you know, pause. And I just pause between meetings. I breathe, relax. And, you know, you cannot be successful. Even looking at the Super Bowl recently, Tom Brady and what he does, he's so into mental exercises and having that mindset. He mentioned meditation, I believe yoga, you know, as being things that he's focused on. So you have a lot going for you early on because you seem to be on the ball. Well, you are on the ball. And I'm excited about seeing your growth and watching you blossom.
Thank you.
You're wonderful. You're amazing. Tell me how you live bliss every single day or as much as possible. How do you live bliss?
Wow. You know, I think about this a lot. Again, I think I'm just kind of a meta cognitive sort of person, always kind of thinking. But I think the biggest thing is cocooning myself from everything else. You know, because otherwise I just feel like bliss is very difficult to achieve if you're always thinking about what he thinks of you and what she thinks of you and just externalities. So I just keep it all internal. I'm like, you know what? I love who I am. I hope other people love me, but I love who I am. You know, I'm very happy with who I am today. I know what I've been through to become this person, and I'm really proud of myself, and I love myself, and I'm happy. And so I think that radiates confidence and bliss and happiness. And that's attractive, right, to everybody. So I think I just separate myself from like everything. I'm just like literally in my own world. Sometimes that's a bad thing, right? Because people think that you're not you're so out of it that you're like on your own. But I look at it as a good thing. You know, I think that's the only way that I'm able to maintain my sanity and do what I do. Because you're right. I mean, all of the stuff that both of us do requires a lot of intellect, requires a lot of like creation. Like, we're not like reading a book to figure out what to say to Oprah, you know what I mean? Like, it's all coming from our head, you know? Yeah. And so somewhere I feel like you can only do that when you're alone and you're surrounding yourself with yourself, you know? So I think I've mastered the art of that, you know, working out alone, taking that time to just being happy and literally waking up every day, going to sleep saying, you know what? I love myself. I'm so happy. Literally, I just tweeted this for Valentine's Day. It was like Galentine's Day. To all these women, I'm like, do you love yourself? And if the answer is no, we're going to have to fix that. You know, we're going to have to fix that. So I think, just deep self-love, just happiness. I'm happy. You know, I'm pretty thrilled with everything in my life. You know, I know the contributions and sacrifices that my parents made for me to have these opportunities. And I'm just like perpetually happy. And like, that's who I am, you know? I think that's how I stay blissful. Maybe a little bit delusional on some accounts, because you're like, it's not all that good. But I'm like, no, it's good. Like, it's good. I'm happy. It's good, you know? So I think, because otherwise, you know, it's unfortunate, right? If you think about like, what's not right and what could be better and what is terrible, like, I just don't want to go down that path, you know? Because I think both of us have a lot more to be grateful for than not grateful for, right?
So. And I believe every entrepreneurial unicorn is a bit wonderfully delusional. And being delusional, you know, I think it's wonderful. I like being me. Yeah. There's a book that called I Like Myself. I got my daughter the book when she was a little girl. And I love it. Just kind of, it's about being yourself and loving who you are. And, you know, I think with the world always changing and things in flux, change is good, but sometimes it can be upsetting. But evolution is a wonderful thing. And it's really important to just make up your mind to be happy. You know, I'm a believer in making up my mind to be happy. There will be up days and there will be down days, but I always choose to you know, find my own joy. And when you can find your own joy, make your own joy, that's a beautiful place to be. So it was amazing having you on the show today. we have to have part two, maybe part three, because you're just fantastic.
Yes.
And it was great chatting with you. Share with our listeners.
Thank you.
You're welcome, honey. What are your social media links? Where can we find you on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, super easy. Speaker Shinjini, so that's SpeakerShinjini. Twitter is my home, is where I live. so really excited to hear from all of you. I encourage all of you, as Mema said, to find your own bliss. I love what you just said, which is choose your joy, find your joy, create your own joy. And I think one of the biggest things that both of us, I mean, a lot has happened in our life, but I can without a doubt say that the thing that I'm most proud of just in my journey is that I've always been able to create my own joy, you know? And I think that that's something that I would love to see more women do as well. So thank you.
You're awesome. You're fantastic. I really enjoyed our conversation. And to all our listeners, until next time, live bliss, love bliss, and be bliss. Talk to y'all soon. Take care. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. We hope you are inspired by the show. Remember, you're the catalyst that the world has been waiting for. In each moment, live in pure bliss.